Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to a very sleepy shed for Missed Apex Podcast. The title of today's show is Ignoring Blue Flags is So Hot Right Now. That provided by Cradzy on Twitter. I'm your host, Richard Spanners Ready, joining you at 11 o'clock UK time. I know, not all heroes wear capes, but at a more civilised hour, we've got Matt Two Rumpets. How's it going, Matt?
It's going quite well. You've caught me at the dinner hour, quite frankly, but I will survive.
Okay, so you've had to use a few spousal credits to get away to your version of the shed.
I will continue to let you believe that, although I think personally the family is just as happy to be rid of me.
That's fair enough. And I tell you what, we will plug Amanda Weaver's books, your wife's books, at the end of the show to try and make some peace. But Matt, that race that we saw today was, I don't think I'm exaggerating. I said to my boy, I said, that was a modern classic at a key time in a championship battle. I said, it's one he's going to talk to his kids about. He's going to talk about that Austin victory, the Monza thing, the Silverstone stuff, Red Bull pipping Mercedes to the flag. And I don't want to be a gatekeeper of F1 fandom, but I did see some people saying, oh, that race was just okay. And all I'll say is, if you think that race was just okay, that there might be some strategic elements that you're missing, and we will try our best to walk you and talk you through those, because to me, that was one of the sweetest strategic battles we've seen in F1.
I have never been more excited to watch a clock than I was in those final laps. Like, our whole WhatsApp chat was nothing but 3 tenths, 5 tenths, 2 tenths. He's inside a second. He's outside. It was so amazing to watch that play out. To see it all come to fruition like that.
I can't wait to get to that bit, because yes, I was up and down out of my chair again, just watching that clock. Would it be 4 digits? Would it be 3 digits? We are an independent podcast produced in the podcasting shed with the kind permission of our better halves. We aim to bring you a race review before your Monday morning commute. We might be wrong, but we're first. We're always trying to bring fresh, new faces to the Missed Apex crew. So making his debut is Nick Alexander. How's it going, Nick?
It's going very well. I'm getting a bit of deja vu. I feel like we've had this conversation about what classic F1 is really like on occasions past.
But, you know, the US Grand Prix isn't classic F1. America just seems to do things a bit different. And I am a lover of American culture, but the US Grand Prix, it just bangs home the whole event in a way that other Grand Prix don't quite.
Was it too much? Was it over the top? Did we overdo it?
Did we frighten the gentleman? No, I've always loved it. You know, I think when we... Was it one of the first Austin Grand Prix? They had they introduced the drivers going, it's Kimi Raikkonen. And then he slopes out as there's fireworks flashing past his eyes. You guys came you realized that you'd kind of alarmed the Europeans a bit and stepped one step back. But it's still a big party and I love it.
I don't know. You could have been describing any American sporting event there. I'm not sure that I recall that. I do remember when we had the the boxing announcer call out everybody's names. I thought that was pretty cool. But
I think the thing
that everyone has to remember is kind of like Texas is to America what America is to the world.
Oh, so the rest of America is going, oh, yeah, that's a bit Texas, that.
Yeah, like the singer and like the fact that the cheerleaders were there and everything. It was a lot.
Let's go all the way to the other side of the world to Jonathan Simone. Jono, thanks for joining us at a sociable hour for you in Australia.
Yep, 9 a.m. And the next five races aren't looking too good. We got 6 a.m., 1 a.m., 4 a.m., 3 a.m., I think 12 a.m. I'm not sure. Something like that to end the year. But I'm not complaining. It's F1.
Do you know what, though? As an English cricket fan in the 90s, I'm still glad that Australians are suffering from Grand Prix start times. Like, I don't mind at all. If I could pick any country to have rubbish Grand Prix start times, it would be Australia.
Well, thank you. I can't wait till the Australian Grand Prix returns, along with all the other Asian races, and you can all suffer too next year.
Yeah. But look, I want to talk tyres with you, because I know if we're going to talk tyres, I talk to Jono. That's what I do. There was a period where Pirelli were almost the villains of Formula One with their chocolate tyres. But it feels like more and more, like no one's saying, oh, Pirelli tyres, they're terrible, they're chocolate tyres. They probably, on race days like this, deserve as much credit as anyone for bringing F1 to life.
Well, 100% after Canada 2010, over 10 years ago, this was what they were tasked with, to bring this style of Grand Prix racing to Formula One. It was one or two stop races. Initially, it came in as high degradation in 2011. We saw four stop races at times for the winner. But we've come into the fray today where I've seen the epitome of Grand Prix racing. We had a brilliant championship fight. Brilliant tire strategies. Some people going for two stops, some people trying things differently. This is exactly what we want to see from F1 racing. I thought today was quite spectacular. I thought very good race.
Matt, I'm only joking. I'll go to you for tires. You know I do. But yeah, today, like, Pirelli hit that sweet spot. And yeah, like Jono said, they started off a bit too far one way. And then I've been annoyed at like the procession of one stop races. If they could somehow find this sweet spot all the time, obviously, the teams would get used to it, but I think, you know, we were in the right place today, weren't we?
Yeah, well, I think what you have is finally the regulations and the ability of the tires to stand up to the energy being put through them match. And if you go back to what Pirelli was originally tasked with, they were, as Jono said, please give us high degradation tires, give us tires with unexpected cliffs in them. Basically, they were told to make tires that fall apart to make things exciting, when what they really should have been doing all along was making appropriate tires for racing.
All right. Look, I will skip past qualifying and the pre-race stuff, although we will circle back to some of the things that happened as we discuss stuff. But I really do want to get to where this magnificent race was won and lost. All right, Matt, we discussed this a little pre-show, and I think this was a race of four parts. I think we are going to, I know we get accused occasionally of focusing on the front battle a little bit too much. I think this week it is perfectly justified. There is the start, there was phase one, stint one, the decisions that ended that into stint two, and then the final stint into the finish. So very much a race of four parts. But don't worry, we are going to go through and talk about Perez's race in detail, the McLaren versus Ferrari battle, which was absolutely fantastic, Alonso versus the world, I think, Yuki Tsunoda, Aston Martin looking a bit woeful, the Alfa Romeos getting stuck in everywhere as well. So absolutely loads to get through. But Matt, start off by telling us where the race was won and lost.
Well, as you know, I do love to set things up, not in strict chronological order.
Okay.
But by picking the most critical point of the race and working outwards from there. Ooh. And happily enough, for your sense of order,
okay,
it's pretty chronological today, because as you said earlier, it is a classic. Your face when I said that was just so beautiful.
But you're messing with me.
Just a little bit. It was a classic race. And I'm going to say that the critical moment, and don't misunderstand me, the critical moment here was lap one, turn one, when Lewis Hamilton took the lead of the race, thereby guaranteeing he would lose.
Right. Now, You said that, and I was like, "Yo, what's this? What's the crazy old fool talking about this time?" But I think you have a good case to make here. But I do want to start with that lap one, turn one battle, guys, because this was set up to just be Verstappen and Hamilton wiping each other out again. And I'm so glad it didn't turn out that way. But Nick, you are the closest thing we have, and I think you are actually a declared Max Verstappen fan. These two drivers going at it, they both do that maneuver where they shove the other driver to the outside. When I saw Hamilton going wide on the exit of turn one, I was not expecting Verstappen to comply and move out. I was seeing echoes of future past again.
Yeah, I hear you. I do feel, though, that there's just so much runoff at the outside of turn one and many of the turns in the whole circuit, especially in sector one, that I guess I'm so used to watching cars run wide at turn one and go off track, which cropped up again later with Alonso and Raikkonen and all that. That,
yeah.
Not surprised that there wasn't contact, but yeah, glad that we didn't have the race just kind of ruined before it even got underway.
I forget that you guys are going to be watching more than just Formula One at the Circuit of the Americas. And when we've watched IndyCar there, like in the final two turns, I don't think they get anywhere near an apex, do they? They pretty much roll around the outside, NASCAR style.
Well, I haven't watched IndyCar there, but I have been for the 6 hours of the Circuit of the Americas a couple years ago. It's a really awesome city, really awesome track to be at.
Jono.
Are you talking about the Circuit of the Americas here?
Of course.
Well, those final two corners, you mentioned NASCAR. It reminds you of the outside. Is it Watkins Glen turn one? You know, where they run wide, just
so
completely
wide,
ignore
yeah.
the curb.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I was thinking about too. Thankfully, though, I'm pretty sure they'll fix that in the future. I haven't watched much IndyCar this year, so I'm not sure if they've even visited the circuit again. MotoGP had some troubles around this circuit a few weeks and months ago. The bumps were insane for them. F1 seemed to cope with them well, though.
Yeah, well, I think they shaved the circuit down a little bit. But as we'll get to later, I think particularly Mercedes had to make some adjustments to make sure they could deal with those bumps and curves. But with those track limits, just wondering, you know, is it just it's just Formula One that gets overly upset about the track limits? Well, I like that. I'd prefer white lines all the time.
Yeah, I think the rule change next year is going to be awesome. Boy, the white line's going to define the track. I think we need something like that to be clearly defined. It'll help the sport. I don't like this thing where, and even in this race, did you see after, I think it was after practice three, was it, where the stewards decided to police, was it the turn six curb or something? And even right. that wasn't policed as the white lines, it was policed as the curb. And then that just becomes really, really confusing. So I think next year when they start to police every track as the edges are the white lines, that defines the edges, that's as best as we can do it.
Patty in the chat makes the excellent point. It seems important that Max went off track and didn't try to keep position and still won the race. And secondarily, it also kind of mattered that when push came to shove, Perez earned his pay today in the first lap by not seriously challenging Max for that spot.
Yeah, so smart from Verstappen, I think, ultimately to go, okay, this is the Hamilton slash Verstappen maneuver. They know that they have two choices. They can either yield and go, well, that car is occupying all the space of the track, I will go off. And here's the jeopardy, though, Matt. If Verstappen then clings on to that advantage, keeps it flawed, and makes up the place, he's likely going to get told to give that back. There's precedent for that. Or he holds his ground and risks a crash. I was quite pleased, because I wouldn't have fully bet if you paused the tape and said, okay, does Verstappen yield and go off track, or does he hold his ground and let Hamilton drive into him? I wouldn't necessarily have won that bet.
Yeah, but I think in this case, working to the advantage of sanity and racing
yeah.
is the fact that Max felt, and I think Red Bull felt, especially after qualifying, that they did have the pace advantage on Mercedes today, especially in the first stint.
And if you look at the apex of turn one, as much as we trash Herman Tilke,
yeah.
you know, it was designed in a way that allowed that kind of battle to happen, where you saw Max always, you know, almost, well, he was forced off the track, but almost collide with Lewis.
Yeah.
Max tried to force him to the tightest line possible. can't do that at a traditional racetrack. There's less width to use at the apex of the track.
Yeah, so these rules sort of seem designed for these modern tracks where it is completely okay, it is completely allowed to do that move that Hamilton did, as long as the outside car yields and goes off like Max did. Still, I will state for the record, if they turned around and said, no, you must now always leave room to the outside, if you force that car off, it's a penalty, I would be very happy for Hamilton to be told off and told not to do that today. But Matt, you are going to credit that maneuver, that win, that victory, that finally a good start from Lewis Hamilton off the line, you're going to credit that through a series of tall tales for him losing the race eventually.
Yeah, by which you mean extremely acute and insightful analysis.
I said that.
Exactly.
Oh, did I not?
Exactly
oh,
what you said. Okay. I don't know what you heard, but that's what I said.
Go on then, do it.
It's very simple. Being in the lead on the medium tire, the medium tire was the weakest of the tires for Mercedes, and it was the strongest for Red Bull. Thus, Max was in a position, by the time they even began to get close to what Pirelli had predicted, which was lap 12, the earliest stop for mediums, he was almost inside DRS at that point, and it just gave Red Bull infinite strategic flexibility to undercut Mercedes. And I think the fact that it was lap 10, which is the second critical point, caught Mercedes out. I think they were thinking he would come in one lap early, but instead he came in two laps early and there was nothing they could do about it because Lewis was in the lead.
Okay, I'm going to disagree with you slightly. I don't think it was bad for Lewis that he was ahead, because if it was the other way around, I think Verstappen goes away a little bit, builds up a reasonable lead, then starts tyre saving, but he's controlling the race at like 5 or 6 seconds ahead. So that happens a stint early if Verstappen happens to be ahead. But you say that Red Bull had all these strategic options from behind. I think they would have had them anyway, because this is where the season-long and even era-long tactics of Mercedes and Red Bull play their part in the history today. Because Mercedes don't take the initiative. They tend to be reactive. That's their choice. I'm not saying whether it's good or bad. But when have we ever seen Mercedes go for an undercut or even protect with the undercut? I think Red Bull know that they've got the undercut that is theirs for the taking, because Mercedes will err towards a longer strategy. So Red Bull are sat there at the back. Am I wrong, Jono? Am I going mad? Red Bull just know in their head that they can toss that in and it will be on them to make that move.
I think you're both correct, because the answer is the faster car has more options. So if you're Red Bull, you're in the better position to win this race, and that's what they did. So the reason it becomes tough for Lewis and for Mercedes is that you have to be perfect, and you're striving for perfection in a sport with the car that's not faster today. It was faster on Friday. Saturday turned out to be, in my opinion, the second quickest car. They couldn't score pole position. And so they were down on options for strategy. I think even if Hamilton had pitted earlier in the first stint, I'm pretty sure that Verstappen would have found a way past anyway, but it would have been a lot tougher for Red Bull.
Okay, so my only issue with that, Matt, is that of late, even if both cars are even overall, even if Mercedes are faster, Red Bull will tend to still look good or better in qualifying and still look good or better in stint one on softer tyres with heavier fuel loads. The Mercedes comes into its own generally on the harder tyre longer into the race. That's the only point I want to sort of make from, oh, because people can't, every weekend we have to deal with Friday. Oh, Ferrari are looking really strong. They could be in with a shout for a win. Dudes, we do this every Friday. And then it's always doom and gloom from Hamilton and Mercedes people around qualifying and even in the first stint. And I just wanted to make that point.
Yeah, well, no, you are correct. The medium tire favors the Red Bull, which is why Lewis having to go longer on it was terrible for his strategy. And as far as Mercedes being aggressive, I would just bring up Barcelona when I think they pitted Lewis a second time and wound up catching Max and winning.
That's later in the race. That's not this kind of, you know, in the situation where it comes to initiating pit stops and strategy, they have tended to be reactive is all.
Yeah, no, they have been, and they were in the lead. And as a result, I think they were expecting Max to maybe try a lap before the pit window, not two laps before, because now that's a real stretch. especially for Red Bull, on a tire that they don't like as much, which is the hard tire.
Yeah, so they've gone to a tire they don't like as much. I just want to stop and check in with our Verstappen. I was going to say Verstappen sympathizer, but that's not right. But as you see your guy in this battle chasing down Lewis Hamilton, my worry was he's not in an overtaking position. He's chewing up his tires. It felt like overly aggressive and maybe a bit naive. Like you wouldn't see Hamilton doing that early in a stint.
In the opening stint. Yeah. So it was a little bit weird. It was like he was following very closely. It seemed like it was very comfortable. It seemed like he'd be able to have options and make a move, but also that, well, he can't just sit in this dirty air forever. He's going to overheat his tires. And that's exactly what he did. And I remember in a little WhatsApp chat, I think Bradley Philpott chimed in, like, this is exactly what Lewis wouldn't do. Lewis would hang back and give himself some space. So it was a little bit surprising. And then it was surprising seeing just how effective the undercut was, to be honest.
And it was massively successful, Matt. And like, yeah, you threw egg in my face because I was going, this is crazy. They've gone too early. But again, all throughout the strategic battle, you thought one team has messed it up. The other team has messed it up. Or have they pulled a masterstroke? Nick?
Well, yeah, it's hard to criticize Mercedes for being reactive if the other team does something that you wouldn't expect. Mm. I mean, like, you know, in a super, super extreme example, let's say, you know, Max pits on lap two.
Then, yeah, they
like,
couldn't have seen that coming.
What are you going to do about it? Yeah, exactly.
Mm. Matt?
But I also think Mercedes made a lesser category of error in the sense that if we look at the gap when Verstappen came out behind Lewis, I mean, he was really at the end of that lap, barely inside Lewis's pit window, maybe by a second and a half. But by staying out those extra laps to try and get a tire offset, they wound up 6.6 seconds behind when they came back out. That's a loss of 5 seconds. And at this point, I do need to remind you that Verstappen only won by 1.333 seconds.
Yeah. But he also had, obviously, the fresher tires. But again, Mercedes, I think, trapped in no man's land. And we saw this, was it the last race out where they were trapped in no man's land? And you were like, well, either pit now or go super long.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting that they didn't want to go blow for blow with Red Bull today.
Yeah.
Because if they had, there was 5 seconds on the table right at the first pit stop if they'd simply pitted Lewis the lap after.
He would still have come out behind, but only, like, just behind, yeah.
But only a couple of seconds. I mean, like I said, he was a second and a half into Lewis's pit window based on a 19-second pit stop delta. And versus 6.6 seconds lost when he actually came out from his pit stop lap 13.
The only thing I have to sort of just play devil's advocate to that is if he did come out 2 seconds behind, let me start that again. If he came out 6 seconds behind, he made up that time through the tire advantage later on. So had he just pitted earlier, he wouldn't have had that tire advantage and it pretty much nullified the effect. I think he would have ended up pretty much the same gap anyway. But I know what you're trying to say.
Yeah, but he would have been 5 seconds further up the road at the end of the race and on the hard tire, which he could have gone longer on and not lost as much time on. But crucially, behind Max on the hard tire, the undercut is available to him.
Yeah. And by the way, I know that a lot was made of the Perez pitted. So obviously this goes counter to what Perez would want to do. Perez would just be like, yeah, I'll just strap some new softs on like 3 laps from the end. Don't worry about me, I'm chill. But they pitted him so that if Lewis ended up going longer, he would then come out behind Perez and have to fight him. This annoyed me that Mercedes saw that as a threat, because had they gone out another, and let's remember that Kota is a long track. So even though 3 laps doesn't seem like a lot, it's more like 5 laps at Monza or Montreal or something like that. So let Perez come in. Let him wear down his tires for 5 laps. And then you're going to cruise past him. So I think they let Red Bull force their hand with the second driver. I don't think Perez would have been too much of a problem at Kota with that much of a tire disadvantage. So I don't know. I just think that was made a bit much of, Matt.
Yeah, I agree. I for about a lap or so, it looked like he might have something going on those medium tires. But really, by the second lap, he was back to the same pace that Verstappen was running on the hards. And that was about maybe half a second or so off of what Hamilton was running on his used hards before he decided to come in and pit.
Yeah.
But regardless of how it worked out, you did have Lewis out with fresher tires and chasing Max down. And that brings us to the last really major tipping point, which was when he had finally just about caught up to Max, was almost inside the almost inside the undercut range, which is usually around 3 seconds.
Mm.
Red Bull just go, okay, lap 29, Max, you can get to the end, right? Yeah, sure, come on in. So there's no undercut. And that was it. Mercedes, again, had no choice but to go as long as possible.
Okay, I want to see where we're all at here. So they say, Lewis, it's 6 extra laps, which in Cota laps is like 100 extra laps. So we know the score. Verstappen's going to catch up for a little bit. Then he's got to hold his tyres as much as he can because he's going to have a charging Lewis Hamilton coming up behind. There's 2 points. The first point is, when Verstappen came in, what did we think? The second point is, when Hamilton came in, what did we think? So, Nick, when Verstappen comes in with a million laps left, where are you at in your head?
Exactly what you said. There's a million laps left. I'm doing math. And I'm like, okay, he made it 19 laps and he has to go 30 more laps. I mean, it wasn't quite 30. I think it was 27 more laps to go. And I was just thinking, no way. I couldn't comprehend how he was going to make it to the end. And then the longer Hamilton stayed out, the more nervous I got.
See, Jono, at that point, I thought it was Mercedes to lose at that point.
Well, we were confused too, because we were chatting in our own WhatsApp group and we thought Max was saving those tires in the second stint. So when Lewis was catching him, we thought he was cruising. We heard on the radio he was calm. We thought he was saving the rubber Lewis was catching him. And then later we thought, okay, once Lewis catches him, he'll break away. But what they did was they pitted. So at the end, it turned out that Red Bull weren't saving the tires.
Christian Horner said at the end that that set was down to the carcass.
Yeah, exactly.
So Lewis Hamilton's going out, Matt, and Verstappen's still slightly catching at that point. So there's this point where there's a 16-second gap with Hamilton yet to pit. Verstappen's on fresher tires, but they're matching lap times. And there was a couple of laps where they were matching lap times. It was staying at 16 seconds. Then towards the end of their extended stint, they hit some traffic, they lose a few seconds, and then that's when Hamilton comes in. So with the magic wand of hindsight, you can go, well, they should have come in before they'd hit that traffic and they'd have been peaches and apples. But once they came out, once Hamilton came out with like 9 seconds to catch, at that point, I was very pessimistic for Hamilton's chances. I was going, no, I don't think that's going to happen, because we see this so often. They'll make up a little bit, and then they get up there, they've used the tires, the guy at the front has saved just enough, and we don't see the overtake.
And yeah, you would be right. I mean, there was enough time. It's like optimum qualifying times. If you take all the fastest sectors, there was enough time in those tires for Lewis to catch Max. But that's not reality on a track with traffic and stuff like that. And we'll get to that. But if they were to come out, if they had, again, followed Max and said, okay, we have a choice. We can try and fight you at the end with a small tire advantage, or we can fight you right now. Well, you know, he was about 3 seconds back when Max pitted. As it was, as you said, when he came back, I think it was about 8.5 seconds he had to make up by going longer. And that's another 5.5 seconds lost to the big clock in the sky.
Jono, I mean, it could be as simple as whatever they did, they were going to be super close. And, you know, perhaps track position was king, and that just means, and Red Bull went for track position, and it's won them the race.
I'm laughing here because this is a tough podcast. Normally we have about 4 or 5 hours to go and study all this and distinguish everything.
Yeah.
Now we're doing this literally right after the end of the race. I'm trying to figure out things on the fly here. It's hard.
Yeah, and tell you what, those lazy podcasts that come out on like Wednesday or whatever, I mean, for F1's sake, podcasts don't release their race review until pretty much the next race is already happening.
Exactly.
Yeah.
How awful is that?
And then they just copy what we say anyway, but add like add quote unquote jokes to it. But that final sector, Matt, that was incredibly exciting for my money. The slight thing that took it away from me, not as we discussed these topics to death. So when the commentators were talking about battery charging, that element I didn't love because you saw the gap seesawing backwards and forwards, generally ebbing towards Hamilton closing the gap. But I don't know, the charging battery strategy does nothing for me. I could live without that.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think what they're saying, and all right, this is kind of a complete tangent, so you're probably going to be sorry you brought this up.
Uh-oh.
But this is actually where Ferrari might have an advantage over both Mercedes and the Red Bull Honda engine, is that the way the straights are laid out is they're very, very long, and most of the power units will suffer from some clipping. Now, they do a special outlap in qualifying to make sure the batteries are fully 100% charged, but when you're chasing someone like that, especially at the end of the race, if you're using more energy than you're recouping, then you're going to reach a point where your power advantage, which is what Mercedes had a little bit, will start to disappear, and you're going to have to just chill a little bit if you want to make another push. Now, it might be the battery charge. It might also be the rear tires on the Mercedes were their weak point. They tended to overheat them. So as we get into the final laps, I'm talking like 53, 54, 55, we did see he was all the way up. He was just about inside of a second. And then he came back out a little bit. And it was the first time we saw Verstappen be faster in sector two, for example. And you're going, okay, either he's trying to save some battery charge or he's cooling the tires just a little bit because he wants to be able to make that final 1-2 lap push to have a real overtake attempt. And I think, but you're down to the drivers. You're down to the kind of margins that the teams are no longer responsible for. You're looking at the drivers absolutely making the difference, I think, in the Red Bull and in the Mercedes this time around.
Both drivers were bloody amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Whoever wins this title, that's a brilliant title. It's a good story. Whoever wins it, it's amazing. Some of you may suspect that I want one driver to win over the other, but honestly, this is one of those titles where you just go, I mean, it's going to hurt if your driver doesn't take this home. I'm not looking forward to a Massa moment if it happens. But in this race in particular, let's look at the race winner. Max Verstappen won this race. And let's be clear, Nick, he proactively won this race. I didn't like the sitting in the toe, in the dirty air. I feel like he kind of maybe took his own team even by surprise by doing that and then going, well, my tyres are gone. Yeah, dude, because you sat in the dirty air. But judging a charging Lewis Hamilton behind you and judging exactly how much tyre and battery you're going to need to win that race, we can't take away how special that was today.
And he seemed pretty cool-headed as well. We didn't get a ton of radio messages, but I remember when he was coming up on Schumacher and he got on the radio, he was so polite. Like, hi, could you please get on the phone and just, no hurry, but if you could just ask him to just scoot over just a little bit, I would appreciate that so much because, you know, race. I've lost my cool more in races on foot that had no consequence whatsoever.
Yeah, it's just this is my stapler. I bought this stapler from home. That was pretty cool, Matt. But let me put my Hamfosi fanboy hat on and go, always you make your own luck. But I thought it was bad luck for him that Schumacher was there. And indeed, he did lose time. But as soon as they go down the home straight and Verstappen's DRS opens and Hamilton doesn't, I just go, ooh, you lucky bugger.
Yeah, no, it was amazing that somehow he didn't get inside the DRS mark, Lewis, that is, and Verstappen did. But it did cost him a lot of time.
It did, about 0.56, 0.6 seconds. But the DRS, I think, paid that back. If you were Verstappen, you'd have taken that loss to suddenly see your flaps open and Hamilton's flaps not open. I sat down at that point. That's when I said to the boy, I said, that's it. That's that. It's done.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and indeed, that following lap, we saw Lewis get wide through the S's and lose even more significant amounts of time.
Well, I've always hated that rule for 10 years with DRS for a driver who's about to lap someone. I always think if the driver's about to get out of the way, why should they have DRS? Yeah. And I've always hated it for 10 years. I still don't know why that rule's in effect, you know? It's not like you're going to struggle to overtake someone who's about to move out of the way for you.
Is it that it's automated, so they can't do anything about it?
If it is, can't you automate it so that if somebody's a lap down on the timing system, you don't get it? I'm sure there's some way to do it.
I mean, you'd think. I don't think Verstappen fans would be very happy if that rule had just been changed. But, look, I'm just saying that that's one bit of good fortune. Hamilton had various bits of good fortune and bad fortune with the traffic as well. Verstappen was held up for two laps or whatever by Kimi Raikkonen, and then somehow managed to get stuck behind Tsunoda. No, dude, we gave you the contract. Get out the way. So yeah, I'm not saying he was fluky just because of that one thing. It's just a factor at the end of the race that possibly took away an attempt on the final lap. That's all.
And the thing about races like this, at least to me, is that the more you think about them, the more you wonder, what if? And I do scratch my head some and wonder if instead of making the fight at the end of the race, Mercedes, who are better on these tires, and Max pitting early and having to go long, I mean, what if they brought Lewis out and he was like 3 or 4 seconds behind on lap 30 and he just proceeded to be annoying to Verstappen, to push him pace wise and make him burn his tires up first?
I mean,
that have succeeded? We'll never know. It's hypothetical, but I do kind of wonder if Mercedes might have missed its strongest strategy trying to be clever.
They're fools for not bringing us into the strategy room. Aren't they? They're absolute fools. They had Ben Stiller in the strategy room and that made them better and they knew it. But, obviously we're armchair strategists here, but it does seem like Mercedes have been caught in that no man's land. They do favour Red Bull have pitted, let's go on as long as we can. And what happens when they do that is they see the gap being chewed up. And then we've seen it loads of times with Verstappen pitting earlier. Suddenly that gap comes down to like 16, 10 seconds. Then they've got too much to do to make up for it. And they either don't follow, or they then don't follow through on the tactic of going longer. But they've aborted that going longer tactic quite a few times. It's a strategic no man's land they keep finding themselves in, Jono. And obviously we could do better if we were there. But yeah. We're not the only ones to observe that.
You don't think Derek Zoolander would make a better strategist than us? Good old Ben Stiller?
Are you saying we should set up a school for strategists that can't pit stop very good?
Well, potentially the Missed Apex strategy team. I think that would be a pretty good team, honestly. I think we do a good job sometimes. But yes, we do trust the strategists that they have more number and more data, whatever you want to call it.
Data, Jono, yes.
Data, the US. I'll say that for Nick. Look, of course, they have the numbers and they're the pros, but I think the only thing I would change, I think the strategy was pretty good today. The only thing I would change is, what if Lewis pitted before Max in the first stint? I'd love to know how the race panned out. Apart from that, I don't really think there were many other strategic mistakes.
We can just put a pin in this, but, there should be a Spanners Ready center for kids who can't race good and want to learn to do other stuff good too.
Yeah.
We can take that offline.
Yeah. I want to point out that we are quoting from Zoolander, not saying the strategists at Mercedes are not good. But yeah, I mean, that takes us really to the end of Won and Lost, Matt. And it was a thriller. My wife came down about three laps from the end, and obviously it's nearing 10 a.m. My 11-year-old's up watching it with me, and she dared suggest. She said, shouldn't Treeface be going to bed now? And I said, Treeface will not be going to bed. Furthermore, we are neither breathing in nor breathing out for the next few laps. And she just went, okay. Went into the kitchen. But I was like, no, what a time to say he should go to bed. Like, the boy's face, he was like indignant with like, what? No, why?
I can't believe you missed an opportunity to troll Treeface a little bit first.
Yeah. Yeah, on you go, lad. Yeah, no, she's right. She's right. You've been up late. You know, it's not even school tomorrow. It's half term. All right, Matt, brilliant. Now, that was race one and lost. And I have to just say, both those drivers drove the butts off and are giving us an absolutely gladiatorial F1 season. Long may it continue. We have still got 5 races left between these two. 5 races left. And Van Geen made a comment. Worst Hamilton fan ever, by the way, privately made a comment to me. He said that Red Bull and Verstappen have got one hand on the trophy. Nick, what do you think? One hand on the trophy.
Yeah, maybe half a hand. They're just poking it.
Jono?
I think unless we see a 2016 Lewis Hamilton engine failure for Verstappen, I'm pretty sure this championship, they do have one hand on the trophy, I reckon, for sure. Definitely with the next tracks coming up, I think a lot of them, especially Mexico City coming up, that definitely has been suiting the Red Bull for many years.
Matt?
Yeah, it's the gap is going out. Mexico is going to be good for them, but I mean, we've seen it before. There's a lot of racing left to be done. We're going more races with more fragile power units, more fragile cars, and I refuse to believe it's over until somebody has a full race bonus.
I am really surprised how confident people are that this championship has tipped massively towards Max Verstappen and Red Bull, Jono. It's a 10-point gap only.
Well, the reason why I think it's tipped this way is with Adrian Newey returning to the team and has more of a say in the car and has ironed out some issues with that car, has the sort of car advantage swung back in Red Bull's favor? They did seem to lose it at a few tracks mid-season, and I thought Mercedes would have had this. Or will we have this 2009-style ending where you don't know what track you go to, and you could go to Mexico City, Red Bull's quickest. You go to Saudi Arabia, Mercedes is quickest. You just don't know. I think it could be random. So maybe the one hand on the trophy is looking into it a little bit too harshly.
Yeah, so it is 12 points. And I almost hate to say it because I'm not trying to be pedantic. And I don't think it really makes a practical difference.
Oh, is it 12?
I think the longer I sit 10. Here and think about the question, I think I'm removing fingers from the trophy. I don't think they have a hand on the trophy. And we're going to 2 new tracks
one finger.
In the next 5.
Yeah, that's true.
So how can you really say that anyone has an advantage or not? I mean, we can't know, can we?
This has been a bit of a bugbear for me, Matt. Every race, obviously Mercedes have done well at the tracks in the hybrid era. But every single track, they go, well, this is traditionally a Mercedes and Lewis Hamilton track. Yeah, they all have been, because Mercedes and Lewis Hamilton have absolutely smashed the last 5 years. So when Lewis doesn't win a race, they go, oh, what a bloody nose Red Bull have given Mercedes at a traditionally Mercedes track. So no, well, they were all traditionally Mercedes tracks. Rip all that up now. Rip up everything. Rip up the Abu Dhabi as a Hamilton track because he's last of the late breakers. Rip up the old Mexico suits Honda and doesn't suit the Mercedes turbo because it's high altitude. Scrap everything you know. We don't know what's coming up in the next 5 races.
Can I, if we're talking about bugbears?
Yeah.
I hate when people say the gloves are coming off. You don't take gloves off no. to fight. You no. put them on and you yeah. can hit harder without breaking. Like, yeah. we're going to hear the gloves are off so many times in the next 5 races. I'm just annoyed in advance.
Yeah.
And I want everyone to know I don't support that kind of language.
The gloves are off. So anyone striking their opponent is going to injure their hand because punching someone in the face with your bare hand is really, really painful.
Their gloves are off just like they have been all the time.
Trumpets.
Well, what's being overlooked here, because we're focusing on the drivers,
yeah,
is
man.
The Constructors' Championship.
Oh, no one cares.
Red Bull are now within, 26 and...
26 yeah, and a... Yeah, 20...
20 no, 20, 23 points.
Oh, maths is hard. Yeah, 23 points.
And the thing with Perez, if he's going to keep on qualifying like this... The constructors, which it seemed to be pretty locked for Mercedes because Perez had been so off Verstappen's pace, well, you know, maybe Mercedes will regret giving Bottas that extra internal combustion engine.
Or will they? Time for me to talk about Perez. All right. Okay. It's been tough being a Perez fan this season. We have had an 8 race period where everyone was just going, well, that's it. He's no better than Gasly. He's proper rubbish. That lad there who won races in his thing, that all in the midfield car, none of that makes sense now. He's rubbish now. So it's been tough and I've been angry and I've held my station, Matt. barely. I have. I've just shut up and swallowed it, to be honest, because it's been a kick in the knackers, race after race after race. But there are signs that he is getting to grip with the Red Bull. It is looking distinctly positive. Russia, where he could have had a result, but for the rain. Turkey, it was a podium, and then a podium here today. It is looking a lot more Perez-like of late.
It's the qualifying. The missing piece of the puzzle has always been the qualifying, and qualifying close enough to the front to be a consistent factor. And here at COTA, he did that. And that is crucial, not only for Verstappen, because he was absolutely well-placed at the start to help his teammate out in pursuit of the championship, but also for the team, because our friend Bottas just got utterly stuck in the back of the midfield and could make no progress. So the constructors, I know everyone's like, oh, that's not the real trophy, but that's where the money is in some ways. And it's not over, and it's equally exciting, I say.
There are a few things to this. So you've got, who would you pick out of Gasly, Albon, or Perez? Who's impressed you the most?
Perez.
And this goes back to, I personally think Perez too, but it's very, very close between the three. The other factor is, which one of those three have had the best car? Definitely, yeah. Sergio Perez.
Yeah.
Now, if you're going to pick one of the three, some people might say, well, pick the young guy. That's the potential for the future. Now, with the Red Bull car being so difficult to drive, you go for the experienced driver. Rumors this weekend that Perez has finally figured out how to set up this car to his style.
Yeah.
Can a rookie do that? And that's why you go with Sergio Perez. Maybe that's why we'll see him now closer to the front, yeah, to end the year.
So the argument isn't finished. The argument may be, you know, may be swayed towards the end of the season if this run is and this setup thing is looking more positive, and then next season might be the season where it goes, okay, we've settled that. He took his chance, and now he's a lot more consistent and up front. But someone there in our live patron Slack group, hello patrons, but I'm going to disagree with you, patreon.com/missedapex to come and join us for the live chat in our Slack group, says, oh, 40 seconds. The pace isn't there, because he was down 40 seconds. The pace isn't there. Jono's about to disagree. Don't worry. No. Jono, don't worry. I've got a list, mate. So you need to just stand down for a second, because I've got a list. So look, my list, here's a summary of Sergio Perez's race here today on a weekend where he could have had pole. I think he did. He probably didn't do his best Q3 run two lap, but he cites a little bit of rain and moisture. He was the last car out, but pole was there. It was a possibility for him. Lap one, he is up the inside of Max Verstappen. He is in a position to make a move, and quite rightly, given the contractual position he's in, lifts off. Even though that brings kind of Leclerc and Sainz into play behind him, lifts off, makes sure Verstappen goes, boom, brilliant. Well, that's a place down, so obviously that affects your race. He is pitted early to mess with Lewis Hamilton's strategy. That's fine, but that strategy is contrary to Perez's strengths. So that's another team role as well.
And pitted onto the wrong tire. The medium tire was a wretched choice for that second stint. Yeah. They wanted to push Mercedes, so they put him on, quote-unquote, a faster tire.
But it didn't work.
But he lost buckets of time on that tire.
Okay, I haven't finished my list yet. I haven't finished my list, Jono. Stand down, right. Jono. I've got to finish my list, and then you can come in. Then
go for it. I'm warming up.
When he was put onto the hards, what they needed to do, from the poor position he found himself from the second stint, they had to say to him, okay, give it everything. Use up all the rubber, just push, and you saw the purples. He was lighting up the timing screen. Push now so that you're in play if we need you, if there's another stop, if there's a safety car, push, push, push. Obviously, that wasn't the optimal strategy, and then he ended up falling down. Also, he had a bit of a snivelly cold, and he didn't have any drink all throughout the race. So 40 seconds, I don't think that's a fair reflection. Nick, quickly, then Jono.
Well, and to add on to the no drink, it was 80 degrees, which is like 26 Celsius. So no drink, and it was hot. It's Texas.
The wrong place to not have your drink. Jono.
That's like Arctic temperatures, isn't it? In Texas, normally it's a little bit hotter, I would assume, over there. I'm not sure how it works in the southern part of the USA. But Perez did have one set of hards for this race. He did not have two. So that was part of the reason why Trump mentioned earlier that he went onto the medium.
Because of the off-track.
And also... Yeah. had Perez been on the same strategy as Hamilton and Verstappen, now maybe he doesn't finish 40 seconds behind, but maybe 25 seconds, maybe something around that range, which is still not entirely good, but it's not as terrible as 40 seconds. The reason is, as soon as they pushed him and tried to challenge Lewis and force Lewis to pit, you back off, save the engine. Leclerc is nowhere in fourth.
Yeah.
Goes to the end of the race. He doesn't have to push. As a driver, you don't have any reference point to chase. And this has happened many times before. It doesn't matter where you finish. It's just seal third.
Yeah. So that's the only reason I got defensive is just because, you know, the Perez Fossey have had kicking after kicking this season. And I've seen the performance in the last three races go, no. He's obviously a good driver. He's found his pace. And in fact, we're going to go on to a lot of the drivers that moved teams really finding their pace. And he's not the only driver that moved teams that has been finding his feet in the last few races. You know, in my esteemed opinion, Daniel Ricciardo in the last three races, even though some prominent folk in F1 loudly disagree with me that he was getting better, he has shown that he is finding his feet at McLaren a little bit more. And I think that's the place we go next, Matt.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
What a fantastic battle between McLaren and Ferrari, particularly in lap one. That didn't look like F1. That looked like a classic Micro Machines from computer game top-down battle. You just had to add little tank turrets to them to make that battle more complete. It was amazing just watching them all swarm around each other. It was great.
Not only, but it was like, it was the trifecta into turn nine, and somehow no one got bashed, which was astonishing on the first lap. But it did kind of ruin Sainz's race a little bit, because as you may or may not remember, he did wind up going off track and getting ahead of both McLarens and then being clever. Now, we're not going to talk about Leclerc too much because Leclerc was just fast today. He was super fast. I mean, just he was not quite as fast as Perez, but he was way faster than anybody behind him. So he got the special "I get to drive in a bubble all day" award. But Sainz, having gone off track, immediately knows he's required to give a place back. And if I'm being honest, and I don't mean to be racist about this, but like those McLarens, they do look alike.
You idiot. You idiot. Okay.
So he lets Ricardo.
Honestly, you scared me so much. I'm just like, okay, here's my old white co-host going, I don't mean to be racist about this. I'm going, oh, this could go anywhere.
And he lets Ricardo by, but it was actually Norris he gained the advantage on. So later on, he was forced to let Norris by as well. And it did not work out as well for our friend Carlos Sainz, as I think he had the pace to do better than he actually did today.
I'm not 100% sure about that Sainz argument. It did feel like in that melee, when he lost time with Norris, battling Norris initially, because Norris came through and it looked at one point like he was going to overtake Ricardo, Sainz and Leclerc into turn one. He just absolutely went for it, basically got the other two, ended up pushing, you know, Sainz off track. Sainz comes back on, but Ricardo had the run from Sainz and Norris battling, and it looked like Ricardo just got them anyway, and then Sainz can sit there and go, Well, I let Ricardo back. Did you? Did you really? Did you, son? I don't know. I didn't buy much of that, but you've got to be pleased, Nick. You haven't abandoned your Tifosi roots completely, have you? You know, Ferrari are looking strong for best of the rest this year.
I'm kind of surprised that you've put that on me, because you did recognize the Max fandom. I was like, oh, we're finally over for Exit.
Oh, no. You can't shake your Tifosi-ness. It must hearten you to see that this isn't a spiraling McLaren 2013-style dismal spiral. It looks like they're on the way back up a bit.
Yeah, I would think that anybody would be happy with that. I mean, I don't think anybody wants to see a team with a long history of being at the top just completely tumble and collapse to the nether regions, do they?
No, how dare you? No, not at all. I would take no joy in that whatsoever. Jono?
I just realized I'm the only person without a mustache on the panel. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, that's a good point. Yep.
I shouldn't have shaved. Talking about the whole Ferrari McLaren saga and the Constructors' Championship battle, that is intense. Now, I know we don't care about the Constructors' Championship too much. You know, it's not the most interesting trophy out there. And the other reason I don't care about it is, aren't Ferrari still paid like $3 trillion a year just for being in the sport? So does it matter where they finish in the Constructors' Championship?
Yeah, and everyone has to laugh at their jokes and they get all the girls. As far as that is in their contract, I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure it is, Matt.
4.5 points Ferrari has to make up on McLaren.
It's very close.
Yeah.
Incredibly close. But I think if you're a Ferrari fan, you have to be excited that the upgrade of the ERS to 800 volts has absolutely worked, because they do now seem to have sort of a built-in performance advantage over McLaren, and we've seen it at a couple of tracks now. So I don't know what kind of magic Zach is going to be able to pull out here, but I hope he's got something to keep this going as well as the Mercedes Red Bull battle is going.
And isn't it officially, is it 2 years now? Is it officially since they were busted for the illegal power unit?
Allegedly illegal power unit.
Allegedly illegal, excuse me. Well, it's definitely illegal, excuse me as well. So
they definitely cheated though, Jono, didn't they? They definitely did.
Isn't that some BS? Let's not go back to that topic, but like, how can you not reveal that? That is just pure manipulation. But anyway, 2 year recovery period and they finally done it and their car is looking pretty good. So I am definitely excited to see, hopefully see Ferrari back up the front next year, because Leclerc is a driver I don't want to see in the mid pack anymore.
The views of Jonathan Simone do not reflect that of Mist Apex Inc. or Spanners in particular. All right, but good. Let's see how that battle shapes up. I hope they keep fighting as hard as that, because it was fantastic. Daniel Ricciardo is looking a bit more comfortable. It's not just the US Grand Prix. He's been looking comfortable for a bit.
Absolutely. So comfortable he can smash into Carlos Sainz illegally.
Okay, go on.
Keep him from passing.
Give me your take on that. I don't know. It seemed nothingy to me, to be honest. I would not have thought twice about it had they not made a fuss on the comms.
Well, it was Sainz who made the fuss. And if I'm going to be completely honest about it, at the time he called it intentional for Ricardo. But when you look back at it, it was intentional only in the sense that Ricardo got on the throttle early and got a snap of oversteer, and that's why they collided. It wasn't intentional, like, I purposefully steered my car into your car to damage it so you couldn't overtake me, kind of intentional.
We've never seen anything from Ricardo to suggest that he was, you know, we don't see that kind of gamesmanship from him, like trying to drive a driver off track or anything like that. Or make contact. Someone we do definitely see that from a lot and have done for ages. Can you guess, kids? Who am I about to talk about? That's right, Fernando Alonso, and we get to play a game.
Whose fault is it?
It's never Fernando Alonso's fault. It is everyone's fault but his. My goodness, did he have some blimey adventures? He had some adventures. Fernando Alonso versus the world. Basically, he seemed to be, you know, enacting a grudge against Alfa Romeo in particular. But I am really interested, Matt, in the moves that were made, because I think they highlight some interesting rules.
They do. And it's fascinating. I mean, you could say he was simply extracting revenge for his teammate Ocon, who got smashed by Raikkonen earlier in the race. But that would not be true at all.
No, he doesn't care about Ocon at all.
Yeah. Fernando cares about Fernando. And that's what makes him so much fun to watch. And here we had the fascinating spectacle of him plowing into turn one with Raikkonen trying to go around the outside. Yeah. He goes all the way to the edge of the track. Now, to be fair to Alonso, he did have the position on Raikkonen. He was ahead of Raikkonen. Raikkonen's front wheels were behind his.
Yeah.
But Raikkonen goes all the way to the edge of the track, right to where the white line is. And he says, I'm not turning my wheel any farther.
Yeah.
And there's lots of carbon fiber. And Raikkonen just keeps his foot in it from there, winds up taking the place. And Alonso is incensed because, and he's not wrong about this, technically, Raikkonen was on the other side of the white line, but only because Alonso was literally planted in his barge board.
So I think this is quite critical to what I was been talking about all season with the Hamilton Verstappen move. You're allowed to go all the way to the outside as long as the car on the outside chooses and volunteers to disappear. Then it's considered fine. But Jono, Raikkonen didn't decide to disappear. He stayed quite a lot there. And the flying carbon fiber proves basically that's Alonso's fault. He's driven into a car that exists on track.
Yeah, look, Raikkonen's coming towards the end of his career, but mentally you can't back out of a move like that. And yes, he's only got a few races left, but he's not backing down to people. And that's what you're seeing with the championship battle, where it's even more spicier, is, you know, Hamilton and Verstappen, and I'm not going to go back to a discussion on their little scrap, but they can't back down to each other. They both have to let the stewards decide stuff. So they have to crash into each other until the stewards say no more. Because if you back down to the other person, you lose the mental fight.
Yeah.
Now, with the around the outside move, I like it. I like that if the driver has to go off, you know, so be it. If there's room, force him off the track. I like that hard racing personally.
Really?
I like that they don't penalize it. But again, the reason why I'm also wrong, the other side of it is, where do you draw the line?
I love that you just argued with yourself. And
yes.
And I mean, exactly. Who won? Who won? Jono or Jono? Like Jono won or Jono two? Who won out of that? But the thing is, Raikkonen didn't move. Therefore, Alonso moves into a car that exists on the racetrack. And
play on.
And there's a difference between coercing the person on the outside to get out of your way and actually physically pushing him off the track. So at that point, Raikkonen's off the track only because Alonso's hit him.
And I think you're critical there. If Raikkonen had tried to keep more of his car on track, he would have essentially driven into Alonso. Because you are required to acknowledge cars alongside now with the latest update of the passing rules back from Austria and whatnot. Cars on the outside cannot simply be made to disappear as they used to be back in the good old days of Hamilton Rosberg at Abu Dhabi. So Raikkonen was within his rights once he got to the edge of the track to not go any further. And I think that's essentially what the stewards were saying. But Alonso was not really pleased with that because technically he was ahead of Raikkonen. Raikkonen was on the other side of the white line. And somehow Raikkonen winds up ahead of him. And this sets the stage for so much hilarity later in the race.
Okay, so what's good is we had the Massey versus I don't know who the team guy is.
Was it No, that's Ferrari. Sorry.
Is it
Brivio maybe?
I don't know. But we had the Alpine guy on the radio, but not after that event. The Alpine guy was arguing the Raikkonen event after the Alonso overtaking Giovinazzi event, because Alonso fires down the inside, goes absolutely miles off track, manages to, obviously scare Giovinazzi a bit, and then comes back on track, is ahead, and then goes, yes, I did it completely legally, hooray. And then that's the point that Alpine get on the radio to the FIA and go, right, so is Raikkonen allowed to go round outside, is he? Is it allowed? Is that allowed? And obviously the argument from that is, if that's allowed, then you cannot penalise Alonso or ask him to give the place back for his dive bomb, Nick.
Yeah, some pretty solid lawyering there.
Yeah, it was.
Find any flaw in that logic. That's what I was thinking. I mean, over the years, I've found myself, I'll be honest, often annoyed with Fernando's radio messages. But this time I was like, this is a man who is just advocating for himself and his interests to the furthest extent possible. Just stringent advocation.
As the kids like to say, he woke up and chose violence this morning.
Yeah.
And that overtake, I cannot stress enough. He drove into a steep turn way too fast.
He was so far back.
He saw all that runoff, and he simply redrew the track for that one corner.
Yeah.
Ensured he was so far ahead of Giovinazzi, he knew he was going to get called on it, and he demanded his team make the argument, well, Raikkonen was over the white line, and he got to keep the place. Why shouldn't Fernando? And just the Mazzi had this sound to me of every parent of every toddler in the world as they make like that laugh. They're like, no one is allowed to do that.
Sorry, I had myself muted there. So I personally so look forward to Fernando Alonso radio messages. It's probably definitely one of my favorite parts of an F1 race. So when I see him pull off these moves, get on the radio, even if it's something calm, you just love it. And I don't know, I like that entertainment. I like that kind of drama. It's not as aggressive as some of his 2005, 2006 radio messages where I borderline felt he needed to go see a psychiatrist. But over the years, he's gotten more timid with them and more calmer and more professional with them, but they're still entertaining. So in my philosophy, Fernando, keep pushing people off the track, keep making really weird radio messages and keep saying funny things in the press and then go and, you know, get penalized and not get penalized and whatever he was talking about.
In case it's not clear, I am a Fernando Alonso fan and have been his whole career, but I'm more than happy to point out his very turnipish behavior. Nick.
I just have to disagree with Jono there. I just couldn't feel more differently about that. I felt like he was stealing the show a bit and I guess bringing entertainment value for you. But to me, it was like drawing focus to something that happened outside the points when there was probably something more interesting going on for me.
That said, Matt, isn't it okay to have the B story? You know what? A C story, isn't it? We had Max and Lewis. We had the Ferrari and the McLarens. I guess it's okay to see Alfa Romeos just with this weird vendetta against Alonso.
Yeah, well, I think you have to have that. But what I love is the conclusion to this story, which is once again into turn one, Alonso goes steaming, brake dust flying out of his wheels. Makes the move on Giovinazzi exactly like we saw Alonso make on Raikkonen, but Giovinazzi goes all the way off track to avoid contact, comes out ahead of Alonso, and is immediately told he has to give the place back. And Alonso is literally seizing on every perceived discrepant interpretation of the rules and taking it up to 11 or 1100, I guess, in this case.
Alonso is playing the referee. He is absolutely, he's done it his whole career. He is very aware that what he is saying is being broadcast. And when he talks about, oh, there's British bias and all that sort of stuff, all he's doing is getting in the steward's head. So when they make a decision, maybe they're influenced a little bit by it.
He's definitely one of the best at playing the political game.
Sure.
He's very, very smart.
That's the one. Yeah, he's political.
100%. He's definitely the smartest. And for me, Fernando Alonso is one of my favorite drivers as well, along with Lewis Hamilton, along with Sebastian Vettel. Those are the drivers I grew up loving to watch F1. But the thing is, to me, Fernando Alonso is the king of hyping himself up in the media by going, you know, I qualified 14th, but that was the best lap of my life. That was a world record lap in this car. And that's it. Everyone goes, oh my God, he must be the best driver of all time.
One time at Monza, Kimi Raikkonen's his teammate. He, at qualifying, he said, oh, look, all the teammates are lining up. He has his teammate. Mm. He has his teammate. Look at me. No teammate. To like go, look how brilliant I am. Look how much better I am than Kimi Raikkonen. So look, whilst I'm saying I've been a fan of Alonso, someone in the live chat said, what, even in 2007? Maybe not in 2007 specifically. But despite being a fan, I'm not saying he's not a turnip. Like, I get it. He's a git. I get it. Right. Let's move on. Yuki Tsunoda, been getting a hard time. Another driver not, you know, jumping into a new car this season, has had his struggles, has been much divided. But when he's been called upon to race and defend against Mercedes, he has defended well. And that's two races in a row, Matt. And I'm just, you know, I'm not saying he's turned it around and he's better than Gasly or anything, but At least we've seen some racing from him. He's got a contract. Toro Rosso see the data and the Honda money and connection. But
I don't know. Sky very clearly said he was not satisfactory after his second or third race. So why they keep him around is just beyond me. Or simply he's started to mature a little bit, is getting to grips with the car, and we're beginning to see what he might be capable of. And so it was probably a smart move to give him some time and space to get to grips with a car at this level, especially because I believe he's on the youngish side for having made this jump.
So he's done enough to get that second contract to be there next year. And there's a lot of drivers, like I said earlier, and I've been making this point all season, there's a lot of drivers that have struggled to get to grips with a new car. And I don't think it's a coincidence that several of them are starting to get a grip at around the same time. It's a shame that it's 15 races into the season, but all those drivers we're talking about have a contract for next year. So if Sainz, Ricciardo, Perez, Tsunoda, name any more drivers who've changed teams, you know, start doing very well next season from the off and don't look as bad as they did at the beginning of 2021, can we roll back to 2021 when we were criticizing all these drivers and maybe just revisit that? I want to talk about Aston Martin before we get to the podium. Why are Aston Martin rubbish? That's happened slowly. Jono, it's happened slowly. I didn't notice, but now they seem a bit rubbish now.
I had them, so let me look at my list before the race. I had them 7th fastest today behind Alpine. That was what I thought. So they're certainly not as quick as they were last year. Vettel scored points, yes, likely due to the DNF of Gasly. I think Gasly would have taken that spot and Vettel wouldn't have scored points. But they do something on strategy that's very common, and that's go long. And that's something you've got to look out for every race, is that Aston Martin are generally the last team to pit. I don't know what else to say. If I were them, just focus on next year. Don't worry about the championship this year. Put as much budget as you can to next year and start off with a good car.
Is that what they're doing, Matt?
Well, yeah. So essentially, if you want to roll it back, you remember when Aston showed up before they were quite Aston and they had a car that looked exactly like last year's Mercedes and everyone thought, oh man, that's really clever. And they did really, really well till the regulations changed and they had to use a new floor design. And then suddenly the fact that it was a brand new approach for them meant that they had no previous data to fall back on to solve all the aerodynamic problems that Mercedes has solved this year.
Okay, so that's why.
That's one reason. Second reason, Vettel, new power unit, although he qualified ahead of all the other new power unit holders, say Bottas, he did have to start, for those taking the full grid drop, he did get to start ahead of them. And then finally, at the first corner, we have some internecine national contact between Latifi and Stroll that spun Stroll around and put him all the way to the back. So as far as this particular race goes, I think that's why you didn't see more from Aston. But the larger issue is they've got a brand new car, and although they understand it much better this year, I think the regulation change really did not help them.
Okay. I think that's kind of all I want to cover before the podium, Matt, unless I'm missing anything. Oh, I've got a question. In fact, Jono, here we go. Mazepin. Mm-hmm. Mazepin.
Yeah.
Has he qualified last every race?
Now, remember, we were going to check this, but I told you the way to proof check that is Google Luca Badawa and proof check his qualifying results.
Is he the worst qualifier ever? And obviously, engine penalties will put people to the back. But has he been last of everyone who didn't get an engine penalty, Matt? Or has he out-qualified anyone at any point?
He might have at some point qualified Schumacher because of a dropped lap or something.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Like that. But essentially, Schumacher has been faster than him all season, although he did have the heavier glued back together chassis for the first part of the season.
So just looking at his qualifying results for the year, a lot of 20s, some 19s, two 18s maybe, nothing better than that. But yeah, the worst average starting position at 19 and a half, if so, pretty much.
So given Jono that it's not the best car in the world, it's still worthy of note that, it's bad.
It's definitely the most difficult car to drive on the grid go back to the first race of the season where both he and Mick Schumacher spun in the opening laps of both those two starts.
Yeah.
Now, he finished almost one lap behind his teammate today. That's a bit inflated because he was lapped more. And when you get lapped, you have to give up more time, but it's still not impressive at all. He had the spin in the opening laps, which set him back a lot of time as well. But he certainly has these inconsistency in him where some races he's decent in comparison to Mick Schumacher, but a majority of the time he's absolutely awful like today.
I do believe I heard briefly that he was having an issue with his feet being incredibly hot or burned, which we've heard from other drivers from time to time, if there are heat issues in the cockpit. So he may have also been suffering with that today. I wasn't able to confirm it before we recorded the show, so I don't want to say it 100%, but I did hear that in the commentary.
Okay, I think that is all I want to cover before we go to the podium. Wow. I tell you what, doing a race review at 11 p.m. is not at all as bad as I thought it was going to be. If anything, this is much more my natural environment. You know, I'm very far away from the hustle and bustle of a family dinner. Maybe we could experiment and do all our race reviews at 11 o'clock. Although it will limit the staff, the team. You know, I did message all the old men in the Mist Apex panel, and they were all like, no, I have to get up by 9 o'clock tomorrow UK time. I'm not doing it. So I had to go to my international crew. We had to go to Nick Alexander, who is in, like, the Rocky Mountains or something. Where are you?
Well, in a global scale, not far off from that, more like the Cascade Mountains.
Okay. There's more than one mountains in America?
There's several.
Oh, okay. Okay. So to the west, at least?
Yeah, I'm on the West Coast. Okay. I'm in the Seattle area.
Okay. Okay. And you used to do a podcast about actual reading books. Did that die?
Yes.
Or?
Yeah, I used to. So I'm wondering why you've brought it up. Just to remind me that I failed at my podcast venture and yours is still going after all these years.
Pod fade. It happens to us all. But on the plus side, you are looking skinny and fit and are running like ultra marathons or whatever.
Just the regular ones. I've done one marathon since probably the last time I was on.
Yeah, but you've got all the gear. I've seen the pictures of you on Instagram with your water thing and your straw. So we can follow you on Instagram by searching for Nick Alexander Running Sexy God, I think. Is that right?
It's at Nick Alexander F1. And some people have found me there, actually.
Oh,
so
there you go.
Go ahead, stalk away. Look at pictures of me running and such.
And Twitter as well.
The same handle. Yeah.
Same handle. So here's the part of the show where we do our Good Thing Award. It's our Thing of the Weekend Award that I would like to give you all an opportunity to choose. So bearing in mind that you are not to pick Sergio Perez and his general weekend performance, who is your Thing of the Weekend?
Well, you said who, but I'm going to... Well, it is a who, actually. The collective 400,000 some odd people that went to the Circuit of the Americas this weekend. Really awesome to see such a full crowd. You could really hear the cheers in the opening laps, especially. It was just, it felt like a real live, normal sporting event. I liked it.
They don't mind expressing their opinions on drivers, on the driver parade. Some drivers got cheers, some drivers got boos, but it was a pantomime.
Yeah, I don't know that I got the driver's parade on TV, but I am not surprised to hear that there were some opinions.
Excellent. Excellent. Let's go to our Antipodean, Jonathan Simon. Jono from Australia. You commentate quite a bit on sim racing, on supercars sim racing.
I do. That just wrapped up a few weeks ago, unfortunately. I really enjoyed that. So for anybody who watches Supercars Action in Australia, we ran our own E-series. All the races are archived on YouTube, so you can still watch them if you're the international audience. And even for Australians too, who didn't catch it on TV, we've got it there. Got some other events coming up too. Run my own podcast channel as well, Channel Klaxon. So I do that. And you can follow me on my personal Instagram as well.
Well, I think, Matt, we can link to that in the show notes below. And make sure that you catch up with that. But supercars, whenever I've caught any of it, just strikes me as like the wild west of racing.
It's, I'll be honest with you, it is one of the best forms of racing you can watch. It's got a mix of sprint touring car racing. Then we've got the Bathurst 1000 and endurance events. And I, like I said last time I was on the podcast, for those who might not watch Supercars Australia Racing, and it's a very popular series now worldwide as it grows, it's a mix of DTM and the British Touring Car Championship.
I think it's a bit more touring car than DTM, isn't it? In attitude.
No comment. A little bit of both. It used to be very loose, but it is getting very corporate. That's the DTM side. It's becoming more and more corporate the way F1 has.
I'm sorry. I watched that video footage from the last of the DTM races, and there's no way that it was anywhere near the standards of touring cars.
Yeah, and that's saying something. Jono, what was your thing of the weekend in the Formula One?
I had something else, which was a little boring. So I'm going to go for something a little bit more lighthearted, which was Shaquille O'Neal standing on the podium, yet almost as tall as the drivers. And he wasn't, standing off the podium, and the drivers were still pretty much almost shorter than him. So he's 7'2" in size. Good to see him at an F1 race. I think he's been to a few. I know he was at Germany 2000 at Hockenheim, I think, but I don't know how many more he's been to apart from that.
No, I reject your thing of the weekend. I'm not having a, look at the clever tall person who happened to be who happened to be born with long bones. Oh, aren't basketball players brilliant for having long bones compared to the silly small racing drivers? That is heightist. Basketball is an elitist, heightist sport, and it should burn. Trumpets, you're tall and I hate you, and you are at MattPT55 on Twitter. What is your thing of the weekend, though?
I just got to say, it's the full race between Verstappen and Hamilton. I loved every second of it. I couldn't look away from it. And especially in the closing laps, it was just utterly riveting. I don't know who's going to win, but whoever doesn't win has got nothing whatsoever to be ashamed of, because this is one for the record books.
I hope when this championship is done and dusted, there's obviously a lot of like very passionate Hamilton fans. There's a lot of passionate Verstappen fans. There's probably an even larger group of anyone but Lewis people, like who are just want Lewis to not win a title. So they're happy to just support the challenger. And I get that. I lived through the Schumacher years. What I would love to have as a kind of pact between all of us is, when one driver wins and one driver is going to win, that it should be a, oh my goodness, like what an opponent our driver beat.
Yeah, that is absolutely the, and that's what it is. Like if you're in a contest like that and you walk away from it and you're not the victor, you can't feel bad because there's nothing left you could have done.
Yeah. And I say to my kids, you know, in nearly all amateur sport, if you win a match or a league, it's almost always because you're just in a league that you're better than. So, like, you need to just get to a higher league and compete at a higher standard. And I would rather, I hate losing, but I would rather lose a good game than win a bunch of easy ones. And whichever driver loses this season will have lost a hell of a season. And whichever driver wins, I think will have a massive stamp in the history books to go, I won one of the best, most competitive F1 titles in history. Is that hyperbole? Is that hyperbole?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. My thing of the weekend, Sergio Perez, shut up. He was ill. He had snivels and everything and didn't even have a water bottle and his shoes were on the wrong feet. But I've just needed these last three performances as a Perez fan, as someone who has emotionally staked reputation on saying that the lad's going to do well, he's going to get settled in. The new contract was good. I would have preferred that the new contract wasn't followed up with eight disaster races. But I'm really heartened by this setup thing of like, I'm not just using Verstappen's setup anymore. I think I know how to make this Red Bull car work. And it's been backed up with qualifying results and some pace. He is obviously still playing the team game. That's fine. I understand that.
Fair enough. The chat room is suggesting Danica Patrick. So I'm just going to put that name out there. It was nice to see a new face in the broadcast.
Considering she was dropped into a completely different discipline of motorsport that she doesn't have like a particular like week-to-week insight of or experience of, as an expert guest pundit, I think she was utilized well and did her and her discipline of NASCAR and IndyCar. She ended up doing, yeah.
Yep.
Did them proud. And this relationship between traditionally European motorsport and American motorsport is just crystallizing, and ambassadors from the US side of that, like Danica Patrick, like Matt Trumpets, are vital to us merging together as this motorsport family. Oh, this is the bit now where we get to just be like super mean and like, and be mean about people.
Been waiting for it all show.
Here we go.
Oh no, you missed the apex.
All right. From our sofas, from our sheds, from our offices, sitting in front of our lovely little dogs, Penny, behind Nick, we get to sit and criticize people who are driving and designing and strategizing billion-dollar prototypes over the course of the season magnificently. Nick Alexander, who are you judging from your office?
From the office, I was judging the grid walk, to be
oh,
honest.
Oh, it was. Oh, no. Oh.
I know Sky. That was a while ago now, but
okay,
because it was before.
It's the Sky grid walk, and we should say, like, when Martin Brundle isn't at a race weekend, I as someone who has to watch the Sky coverage, because that's the only legal way to watch it in my country, I miss Martin Brundle. When he's not there on the commentary, I really, really miss Martin Brundle. I hope he keeps commentating on F1 forever. The grid walk isn't my favorite, Nick.
It's a hard task. So I don't, you know, we were just so nice about Danica. So then I'm like, oh, I'm going to immediately follow this up by dunking on Martin Brundle.
That's the segment. But that's the segment.
That's the segment. That's right. That was the assignment. So I think it's a hard task. He has all these celebrities. He's running around. It's meant to be spontaneous. You're meant to bump into people. But it's really hard when some people are willing to talk to you. Some people are not willing to talk to you. It's like, I feel like when you have interviews and other sports, you know, between innings or periods or whatever, that, you know, the players kind of take turns taking the interviews. It's like, is there any way that we could like prearrange this a little bit and people could take turns talking to the media? Because it's totally ad hoc. And sometimes it's really great and he really strings them all together. This time, it kind of hurt.
You kind of have a sense of which celebrities aren't going to have a massively brilliant opinion on Formula One, because they've just been invited. They're guests. They're there to learn about F1 and go, well, what do you think about the engine rev rate and the Mercedes turbo? How do you feel they... Pff, race cars go vroom.
Well, how long have you been a fan? How many races have you been to? And it's like, can you not gatekeep this basketball player on live television? It's not really fair. I thought Ben Stiller did really well. He was like, I'm just here to watch the race. I brought a family member, you know, happy to say hello for the cameras. But, you know, I'm a TV guy, like, I don't know.
I'm reluctant to put that all on Brundle, because you'd think there would be someone like ahead of him that would arrange which celebrities actually want to talk about F1 and which ones, like Serena Williams, have consistently proved they don't want to be spoken to.
And maybe in the future they will do, because with Serena especially, that was pretty painful. It's because it was 0-2.
Yeah, well, it was 0-3 in the end, Jono.
I personally disagree. I think from a TV perspective, I like the ad hocness of the grid walk. I like the chaos of it. It gives you a feel of what the F1 grid really is. Mm-hmm. Some of us are not privileged enough to be able to go onto the grid and get those passes, you know? So I would kill to be there one day. I find it funny when celebrities reject Martin Brundle and then he literally speaks to their posse and goes, yeah, buzz off. I can talk to him whenever I want. That's the best moment. That is, do not disrespect Martin Brundle. So to me, I just love that stuff. And I love seeing, you know, after 10 years, I'm going to see another 20-minute compilation of best grid walk moments. And I'm going to watch it maybe four or five times a year.
That's a good point. If someone sent me a link of a YouTube video, here's 50 occasions that Martin Brundle has failed to successfully interview a celebrity on a grid walk, I'm probably going to click that. So, yeah. Jono, who missed the apex for you?
This is a bit of a weird one. And it's not really a criticism of Nicholas Latifi, but starting grid for Williams was George Russell 20th, Nicholas Latifi 14th. Now, he was involved in a collision.
Yeah.
Now, what was funny about that, and yes, this wasn't Latifi being slow or anything, was at the end of the first lap, it was the opposite. George Russell 14th, Nicholas Latifi 20th. I just thought that was funny and pretty embarrassing for some reason. So that is, you know, that's who missed the apex for me.
I didn't see the incident, Matt, but he got sandwiched a little, did he?
Well, okay, so do we all remember Pierre Gasly in Turkey and Alonso, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So his call on the radio was, oh my gosh, those Haas, what are they thinking? They just dove right up the inside of me. I was sandwiched, which is what happened to Gasly, and he got blamed for the Alonso incident. So draw your own conclusions, and I swear I'm not in the least bit biased, because later on, he drove out of the pit lane right to the edge of the track and completely ignored the fact that Ocon was there.
So he slighted Ocon, Jono.
Didn't Alonso say that only French drivers get penalties in F1? I'm pretty sure he said that somewhere.
Matthew Rumpitz, who missed the apex for you?
You know, I was really worried that this would get picked up, but I'll tell you who missed the apex for me. Kimi Raikkonen. And no, not because he smashed into Ocon on the first lap and totally ruined his race. Not because he illegally passed Alonso outside of the track.
Oh, come on. What?
No. He gets the Miss the Apex award because he was in 10th place with two or three laps to go and just said, I wonder what happens if I turn the wheel the other way here, and did a big spin, and no points for Alfa Romeo.
But that's very un-Kimi Raikkonen-like, isn't it? Mm. To just drop it like that.
Especially at a track where he picked up his last win as well. I that was a great one. I do agree with Trumpets that he definitely missed the apex and he threw away points. How many? Alpha was so quick this weekend. Just one more thing. Their pace all weekend. You look back to FP1, they were 9th and 10th. They were so quick. And yet this is one of their few chances to score points and gain some any vital hope to take Williams for the next spot in the standings. And he blew it.
Wow. Well, no one picked Alonso. Sweet. That's an easy one. I picked Fernando Alonso for smashing into Kimi Raikkonen, diving down. Do you know what? This is the one that really gets me. It's the diving down the inside of Giovinazzi, declaring that the outside of turn one is now definitely the track, and then going on the team radio and going, yes! You know, like really celebrating it. Like he was fully styling it out. Like maybe if I celebrate hard enough, the stewards will go, oh no, look how happy he is. Like, fair play. Fair play. He wouldn't be that happy if it wasn't legal. So that's my missed apex award, Alonso. Yeah. Okay, good. Pony. Do we have any ponies? I'll press the button then see if we've got ponies.
Daddy, I want a pony. And I want it now.
Now then, I didn't hear too many pony awards. We did have that incident in practice, where it was a bit of a Days of Thunder type incident, wasn't it, Nick? Between Verstappen and Lewis Hamilton.
Oh, I didn't watch practice.
What?
Even if you don't watch practice, you don't admit to watching practice.
Just like nod and go, why don't you tell me about it, Spanners? Okay, I will. So
back to you.
Lewis Hamilton and Max Verstappen were lining up to do hot laps. Hamilton's behind another car. Verstappen goes down the inside in the last sector somewhere. And overtakes, and there's some kind of gentleman's agreement that you don't do that when you're queuing up to do your hot lap. Lewis Hamilton is like, ha, don't you overtake me. I'm the one who overtakes you. And in an act of reasonable pettiness, then goes down the inside of Max Verstappen near the end of the lap to kind of take his place back. Very petty. But what was super telling was that as soon as he did that, Verstappen didn't go, oh, you broke the agreement and you overtook me. He put his foot in and like hung on and clung on round the outside. It was like Days of Thunder in the wheelchair down the hospital corridor. You're not racing, lads. You're not racing. But it was that rush of blood. And I believe they both threw up middle fingers to each other. And you went, this has gone beyond. They're a little bit, it's a bit aggro, Matt. It's a bit aggro. And that radio message, though, none of the Lewis Hamilton stuff was broadcast. The hand gesture from Hamilton wasn't shown. In a strange turn of events, Max Verstappen's behaviour was highlighted by the radio calls and the video, just after he had told everybody that he was not going to participate in the Netflix Drive to Survive series. And then my conspiracy theories, Matt, is that the FIA are punishing Verstappen by highlighting more of his stuff because he's not playing Netflix. Boom.
It's always worth remembering they get to choose what gets aired. Yeah, so if they want to make you look bad, guess what? They can make you look bad.
Yeah, I think Verstappen came off worse than that, or from that, than he perhaps could have done. I believe that narrative didn't favor Verstappen. in that case. Do we have any ponies, guys? Do we have any pony awards? Nick has one.
Well, the Alpine guy that got on the radio complaining about Raikkonen overtaking on the outside, that was rude, in my opinion. I mean, I know you want to advocate for your team and whatnot, but I don't know. I feel bad for Massey, and these radio messages being broadcast is something relatively new, but it's like, it didn't seem very professional to me the way that they were talking to Massey on the radio. I thought it was too much.
I agree. It needed the Curb Your Enthusiasm theme music while it was going on.
Matt, did you have a pony as well?
You know, I will bring this up. Is Red Bull complaining about Mercedes rear suspension?
Oh, yeah.
And then it turns out that half the teams have been doing it for like the last 30 years or whatever. Like, I know it's part of the overall championship game to just mess with people and make them spend money explaining stuff. But yeah.
So, yeah. So Red Bull had complained about it. And then a certain member of the Sky broadcast team declared it to the world as if it was this new, like, as if they had just discovered DAS again.
Yeah.
And that particular broadcaster has been accused in the past of
possibly
being
allegedly
having some ins to Red Bull, and that may be passing on some of that information. Okay, so we have one award left, and that is to our live stream that are watching us. These are our kind patrons that support us at patreon.com/missedapex. Link in the show notes below if you would like to support us with a micro payment every month. We have a few tiers. You can get an ad-free audio stream. You can get the extra content that we do sometimes before the races, which is worse content, because we're more chilled, but, you know, it's extra shows. And you can join us in our Patreon Slack group, which is where our live stream chat currently is. Did I say the link? patreon.com/missedapex. They get an award, though, for the funniest or most insightful comment, and it's called this.
Comment of the Week.
That's me singing that, Matt.
You and maybe somebody else.
Wife might have helped. All right, fine.
Bit. Yeah.
Give us some candidates for comment of the week, and we are going to let, because it's Nick's first time on the show, we're going to let Nick pick the winner.
All right. Well, I will say Stuart Neal is first up regarding our Pirelli tire discussion. Just need sprinklers, and we have the perfect format.
Yeah, well, this is the thing. People go, oh, sprinklers, that's stupid. That's artificial. Yeah, literally everything in motorsport is artificial. It's fine. Like, everything has been created. We're not racing around on trees, on waterfalls. Everything in F1 is official. We can decide. If we want F1 to be sprinkler-driven, it can be sprinkler-driven. Next one.
I think we're going to go with Chris Fonseca, who had several very good ones, but I'm going to choose Alonso has left the chat and gained an advantage.
Oh, that's too funny. Next.
Todd in Phoenix regarding the Latifi Stroll Canadian collision. I was surprised the team radio wasn't everyone involved just saying sorry.
Okay, I mean, racist, but very funny. Okay, is that it?
I think we have two more if we've time. One is Keith H. Richard's missed apex, Red Bull's drink engineer.
Oh,
for
yeah.
For the Perez drink failure.
How dare you deny Perez water? How could you? Go on.
And lastly, we have Rolando Perfosi Castellanos. Rule number one of Map Club. Don't talk about not watching free practice.
Yeah, Nick. But I believe you have a candidate as well, Nick.
Oh, I don't have a candidate. I was going to weigh in. So about the Canadian saying sorry about causing a collision, there is actually a Canadian law that covers that apologizing is not an admission of guilt. It's just they reflexively say sorry. They're sorry that it happened. It's not sorry, I apologize. There is a law to protect Canadian motorists.
That's incredible. Because, yeah, in the UK, that's one of the things you get is like, don't admit guilt, don't apologize. Be nice, but don't apologize. I love that the Canadians literally have a law to allow it. Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to pick the comment from Chris Fonseca that Alonso has left the chat and gained an advantage.
Well, Christopher Fonseca. I mean, we tried to ban him from winning, but he is an unsinkable rubber ducky and wins.
Comment of the week.
Ladies and gentlemen, please go and follow my panel at @NickAlexanderF1 on Instagram and Twitter. Follow the link in the show notes to catch Jono in his Supercars commentary and your podcast channel. Remind us the name of your podcast channel.
It is @ChannelClaxon. You'll see it in the YouTube description.
Okay, us on YouTube. That's good. And follow Matt at MattPT55. He's the second best one. And he has a wife who has allowed him to come and do this podcasting during dinner time. Apologies, you're going to have to go and eat some cold dinner, Matt. But we can make it up to her by putting a link in the show notes to her romantic novels.
And we shall.
And tell people to follow her at A Weaver Writes. I would love it if you would follow the show. It's at Missed Apex F1. Apart from all the Patreon stuff, we've got a Facebook group. We have that Twitter account. We try and be as interactive as possible. You can email me, spanners@missedapex.net, Matt at missedapex.net, or both of us, feedback@missedapex.net. We're a little behind with the emails, but we do read them all. So please do keep getting in touch. We're going to line up some great content for the next couple of weeks. Matt, is it Mexico in 2 weeks? It is, isn't it? So we've got a week's break.
Indeed it is.
Then Mexico. That is going to be good. It's not on Halloween, though, so I can't do my Day of the Dead makeup like usual. I'm very upset about that.
That's a shame.
Mm. But you can follow me, too, @SpannersReady. Wherever we see you next, work hard, be kind, and have fun. This was Missed Apex Podcast. Oh, my God, it is 12:45. It's midnight 45, Matt, and the last thing I want to do is go to bed. Like, there is no part of me right now that is like, yeah, it's sleepy time.
Well, that's good, because, like, you've got a lot of editing work
Now. I've got, like, an hour and a half's worth of editing. It's definitely going to be past 2 o'clock before I finish.
Oh, that's painful, man.
We could do a tire talk addendum and get you back on track for your sleep schedule.
Yeah, that could you wait till after I've done the edit, though? Because there's loads of times where we have, like, really high-energy shows, and I'm like, wow, I'm buzzing so much. And then, like, there's some audio problem, and then I have to spend, like, an hour fixing, like, a buzz from one of the panelists. And by the time it's finished, I'm, like, proper noddy dog. But then even then, you don't want to go to bed. So I've said to the kids, so my wife is working. She's got the shed from, like, 8 o'clock doing lessons and live streams. The children, 9 and 10... I've said, if there's an emergency, you can wake me up. Do not starve. Do not struggle. Do not deal with your own injuries. If you need me, wake me up. But try not to need me.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.